What up, everybody? It's your boy Joel, live from the 509, which is Port-au-Prince, Haiti. Beautiful, sunny Port-au-Prince, Haiti. So since I'm in the 509, I have to say, sak passe tout moun. I'm here on vacation, actually, but even during vacation, I'm still going to find a little time just for a little bit of work. In advance, let me apologize for the background noise. I'm sitting on a beautiful terrace, but it's close to the road, so you will hear trucks, you will hear motos, you might hear people yelling, but apologies in advance. So I'm in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, like I said. I'm here on vacation, but Haiti is in the midst of a lot. I bought my ticket, and I didn't realize that February 7th, so we're recording this on February 7th, which is the day, I guess now, officially the former president of Haiti, Michel, a.k.a. Miki Martelly, has officially stepped down from power. That's what the Constitution says every 5 years. So I was here when he came on board. I was here working for an NGO, and now I'm here when he's leaving. I didn't plan that. But leading up to that moment, there's been a lot going on in Haiti. Protests, there was an election, it was deemed fraudulent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But here we are, and Haiti's going to move forward, and hopefully it'll move forward in a positive light. But here, not just to discuss that, but also to discuss other things, I have a special guest today. Jitsky Dumont is a co-founder for a blog post, Aibo Post, which I think is the hottest blog post Haiti has seen. That's my opinion. Maybe he'll agree, maybe he'll disagree. But he is here today, and welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Nice. Thanks for having me.
So as soon as I saw this blog post on Facebook, my cousin sent me the link. I'm like, yo, what is this? And I read some of the articles, and automatically, I was like, this is dope. This is a platform for, I would say, young Haitians. By young, I mean anywhere from the ages of 21 and up, 21 to like 40, maybe.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. It might be from 17 to 35.
Okay.
Mostly. We got some other people that contributed, but they're professional that wanted to talk about specific things.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they're older.
Gotcha.
But most of our bloggers are from 17 to 35.
So what gave you the idea of wanting to start a blog where people could voice their opinions about, you know, anything? Well, first off, what gave you the idea, and did you first want to make it just about politics, or that was not your goal?
It's not the goal. It's still not just about politics. We have section on lifestyle, on social, on sports, plenty of stuff. But it seems the country is a very political oriented country. Politics kind of took over. But in general, we try to have some diversity in the blog. And the idea came because basically I have a loud mouth. So I wanted to express, to let that loud mouth speak. So I called a friend of mine, a good friend, Nike, Michelle. And she and I worked on the blog, on the website. And then right after we were done, she did all the creative, most of the creative stuff. So the website, she built it. And then I did bloggers recruitment. So get people with few cool ideas that I know to try to contribute. So that's how it started. And then it's been now, it's going to be 2 years in June, so a year and 7 months.
Wow. Time flies. The posts are in Creole, they're in French, and I've seen some in English.
Yes, it's trilingual,
mm-hmm.
Which we at some point wanted to include Spanish, but we had no editors that were Spanish-speaking editors. But most Haitians now try to speak these three languages. They try to read in them. So we wanted people to express themselves in whatever language they felt comfortable in. And we wanted to include the diaspora too, the young Haitians that live abroad in Canada, in the U.S., so that they can contribute to it too.
Do you find that sometimes, I guess as co-founder and as one of the main editors, when something comes across you, are there times you don't agree with what you're about to post, but you post it anyway, or does it always kind of have to be like, I kind of agree with this?
Nah, actually, I gotta say it. Most of the thing that we post, I don't agree with. Maybe it's because I'm very strict on my philosophy of life.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot that I don't agree with, basically. Right. So there's a lot that is posted that I definitely don't agree with. But as long as it's a well-put idea, it's well-written first, the idea doesn't promote violence. The post cannot promote violence. That's rule number one. And if you have an argument for what you're saying, as long as you have that, we're good for it. We're good to go.
That's really cool. So when I was growing up, I went to your father's soccer camp. And I think that's where we met. So you were like maybe 6. I don't know. You were.
I don't remember.
Bro. Yeah, I remember. I was older. It was a long time ago. But your father, back in the day, sorry for that truck. But actually, let me put it this way. Haiti, the main sport, I don't want to say the only sport, but the main sport is soccer, football. Yeah. So I came here and I was in soccer camp. I think I was 12. And then your father was leading the soccer camp. But he's also was the and continues to be the voice for Haitian soccer. I remember, you know, the bamboul calls, all that stuff. So growing up, you grew up around that. Do you think that influenced you at all? Like, so you say you have a big mouth. I mean, you meant it with all love, I'm sure. But your father has a big mouth. And I mean that with all love because he was on the radio. He was on TV. Do you think that influenced you at all?
I think my father has a different big mouth than I do. I think. Sometimes. Can I curse?
Yeah, you can curse.
Ah,
they meant by BTS, you could curse.
So sometimes I pull shit out of my ass.
Yeah.
But I don't think he does. I don't think he does. But definitely, I think in my household, we were allowed to express our voice, our opinions. So there was no problem if somebody disagreed with somebody else. So I very often disagree with my father and my mother. It wasn't a problem. So I get that's where it's coming from. And maybe I was influenced by my dad in some ways. I was definitely influenced, and still I'm influenced by soccer in general, the sport. It's a sport that I really love. I think the sport kind of designed my way of thinking, too. So if by correlation my dad put influence me through sports, through soccer, and then soccer influenced me, I guess my dad influenced me. So
no, that's a
and maybe we I think we share a lot of philosophical views too. Politically, we have a lot of differences, but on philosophies, we have a lot in common.
I think that's cool that you were kind of given the freedom to do that. I think, I don't know, I feel like Haiti sometimes has a way of separating people based on political and philosophical differences.
Yeah.
Maybe this has changed a lot.
I don't think it has, man.
Oh, damn.
Unfortunately, it's still like this, man. You have people that understand that, for example, I can have a view that is completely different from yours, and I express it. I don't mind telling you that I basically think that yours is trash and mine is good, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we cannot be friends. It doesn't necessarily mean that we cannot collaborate on other stuff.
Right.
You know, we have a hard time making the difference between somebody's views and the person. So it's very hard around here to do that,
mm-hmm.
because people are very attached to their political view because it's closely related in Haiti to social background.
Yeah.
So And in Haiti, social background is very important to Haitians. We cling in the idea that we were from this section of the society. So basically, the richest person is gonna stay with the richest people, and the poorest, they're gonna be proud to be with that kind of poor people, you know.
Like, what's your name? Where you from?
Exactly.
Got you.
And will you know? That's the most important question.
Right.
Yeah. So
that's one of the things. I mean, growing up, I was here every summer, but that's like the biggest thing for me that I didn't miss. Like, you know, I'm from New York, and when we're on the subway, I could be standing next to the poorest person, and then to my right will be the richest person.
Yeah.
There definitely are class issues, and it's presenting itself a lot more as New York at least changes. But in Haiti, it is really profound.
It is more so in Haiti, because there's no places, exactly like we're saying it, like in the New York subway, where the richest person can meet with the poorest person. There's no such place in Haiti. So
yeah.
Basically, the richest person in Haiti has no idea how the poorest person lives.
Right.
Just like the poorest person, the only idea he has, the only thing he associates with the richest person is the big car.
Yeah.
That's it.
There are a lot of big cars here.
So it's very complex, and I think the complexity makes it very hard to understand and to swallow.
I feel you. Let me ask you this. Did you study in Haiti, or did you study abroad?
I studied abroad. I studied in New Jersey.
In New Jersey.
In university, I studied finance.
Okay. Let me ask you this, and I brought this up with a lot of my cousins who are your age and my age. A lot of people, I guess it is some sort of a brain drain. Young people, they leave Haiti to study, and they just don't come back. Did you know when you left that you were definitely coming back? You're like, all right, I'll be back in 4 years.
Yeah, I know I would come back. I knew at some point I would come back. The plan was to study, get a job, and then after 2 years, come back. I kind of did that, except that I worked for a short period of time. I didn't work for as long as I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Because when I left my job and looking for another one, that was when the economy wasn't that good.
In the States in the world, pretty much.
In the States. So I decided to come back. And so far, it's been okay.
Yeah, so you're doing all right.
It's been okay.
Something I brought up. So a lot of people that I know, my cousins and friends included, they've left to study abroad. And they've kind of opened their mind to things. They've seen, not that being in the West is the be-all, end-all, but they've kind of seen how things are done, where there's kind of some sort of potential, where you can kind of, if you work hard, you can move up. And then they come back to Haiti with these great ideas, and then they're kind of put in this box, where there's a ceiling, is what I'm saying. Do you feel that's true?
That's true. That's definitely true. I don't think there's a ceiling. I don't think it's necessarily a ceiling. I think it's a lack of infrastructure.
Mm.
So the lack of infrastructure limits you how you could expand yourself.
Right.
Because for example, let's say that a young couple or a young person comes back in Haiti with a great idea. They start moving forward with it. There's a very, very limited amount of way he can finance this idea or this business or this project. There's a very limited, there's not that much way to do it. Haitian banks are not open to small businesses.
Right.
Most likely they're not. And if you're a startup, they don't even consider you at all. So there's a lot missing for young people to expand themselves and explore themselves too. So a lot of time people have that feeling that they cannot fulfill their potential when they come here, and I think it's true. But let me tell you, you have something to gain. You get the sun,
Yeah.
You have the beach. Yeah, you know, the beautiful mountain. So I guess, look at you now in the sun.
I know.
You're not in the New York cold.
I am not. It's snowing in New York. I'm happy as hell. I think a lot of people don't realize that. A lot of people who aren't from a place like Haiti or anywhere else where they see whatever CNN shows, like, you know, whatever it's political turmoil or natural disasters or war, why people would want to live that way, and they don't really understand kind of the sense of home.
Yeah. Let me tell you, the best way to explain it, it's how you feel when you're close to your parents. So let's say after a few weeks missing, being away from your parents, and then you finally see them, there's that little feeling that you have, and that's the only way to express it. Because when you're away from your home country, and then you get there, it doesn't necessarily that it's not going to annoy you. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're not going to be pieced from here and there. But the reality is that there's a sentimental comfort that comes with it, and that you kind of have to value, even if you try to for a certain period of time you try to forget it, but at some point you'll feel the need to come back. And I think we need to agree with that. And the diaspora needs to understand that even if they're away from Haiti, there's always some way that you can contribute, or you can from time to time feel at home, man. Come visit, just like you're doing.
I agree. Coming here, every time I come here, and the older I get, I'll put it this way, the older I get, the more spiritual it becomes for me.
And what's crazier is that you were not raised in Haiti.
I wasn't.
So that's crazier.
It's crazier, but, you know, I came for the summers.
Yeah.
School was out. I was like, I was here. And I was here for, you know, the entire summer. And, lucky for me, I got to learn the language that way. And then I came back and worked. And working here was different, though. And I think if I could do it again, I don't regret anything. But, you know, working for an NGO, it's in where you're from, I would say, I wouldn't call it damaging, but it is shocking a little bit.
It is shocking. You work where?
I worked for in Plateau Central for
La Santé, c'est la vie?
No, Partners, Jami La Santé.
Jami La Santé.
And I have, you know, I'm not going to bash them, but it's almost like, imagine you go away for, how can I explain it? It's like someone coming into your house and they don't mean any harm, but you just see them using things you would, in a way you'd never do it, you know? That's the best way to explain it, I guess. And just being restricted. But it did allow me to get to know a part of the population
Exactly. That's what happened. For example, when you used to come during the summer, these kind of people you would never meet.
Never.
Because they were not part of your social class.
Not at all. Exactly.
You would never meet these people. But let me ask you, did you enjoy did you feel at least that you had an impact when you were there?
I think I had impacts on individuals versus like projects I was doing. Some of the projects were good, but they were all temporary, you know? And you're working for a place that has an agenda, that has a plan, and you're part of that plan, but it's hard to kind of make your own impact unless you make it on individuals. So I worked with a lot of people who were doing great work with, you know, psychologists and social workers who were impacting people's lives, and that was fulfilling for me.
Okay. But what about, what's the name of it? Zami La Santé.
Zami La Santé, yeah.
It's a shame that I don't know them, man.
They're in the Central Plateau.
No, I know them. It's the biggest hospital in Haiti right now.
Yeah, it's huge.
But I cannot remember the name.
Yeah.
It's Zami La Santé, right?
Zami La Santé in Creole, Partners in Health in English.
I think I remember Partners in Health better.
Right. Shout out to Partners in Health.
What's the name of the owner that...
Paul Farmer. He's the founder.
The founder.
He had, you know, the whole book, Mountains Beyond Mountains,
exactly.
Etc.
Now he lives in Rwanda, right? With his wife and family.
Yeah, he lives in Rwanda. I believe that's how the last I know, actually, he's living in Rwanda. And Rwanda is Rwanda's pretty amazing.
It's an amazing country,
it's,
man.
It's crazy. And the minute I got to Rwanda, I just drove through. I've been there twice. One time I drove through. I was leaving Congo to go to the airport in Kigali. And I was shocked. And it just reminded me of Haiti because the landscape's kind of the same. You know, the people don't look, they don't look like Haitians. You know, not all black people look alike. Sorry. but, you know, they just, they don't look Haitian. But, like, there's structure. And,
of course.
And then, you know, there's a lot of, like, you know, the nature is similar. But, you know, they don't have beaches. But in terms of the mountains and the trees.
This is one of the great stories of the third world, man.
Yeah.
One of the great stories.
It is. It is. And people have a lot to say about their president, but.
Kagame is the truth.
He's the truth. I mean, he is. You can tell, though, he's beasting on people over
but
there.
I think that he made a huge mistake by having the parliament vote that he can keep on being president.
So you don't agree in people passing their mandates?
Yeah, I don't agree with that. Yeah. I think it really wasn't the right move for him.
Mm.
If he had believed in the system that he created, that he put in place, he should have let somebody else take over. Because this is like fake democracy, man.
I mean, it's not democracy. I mean, look, I'm gonna give my opinion coming from someone who is.
Who's been there?
No, I've been in Rwanda. I passed through, but. From what I saw, it looks great, but I'm going to give my opinion relating Kagame to Haiti and giving my opinion as a diaspora. I think that Haiti needs someone similar, but who has good intentions. I think
he has good intentions.
Kagame?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Similar in terms of someone who's willing to stay here and maybe stay, you know, 5 years, another 5 years, 15, 20, but. If they're really about that life, and that life meaning like moving the country forward and pulling it out from the mud. Again, this is my opinion as someone who I've lived in Haiti 2 years. I've, you know, been coming my entire life. So my opinion is limited in terms of knowledge. But just seeing from traveling to other different developing countries that have a similar fate or history to Haiti, that's what I think. I would love to see someone who's really about it.
I like how safe you are, man.
Oh, man, hey, man. I'm wearing a condom right now. But I'm just saying. But that's what I'm saying. But that's his, you know, that's just my opinion, man. And I'm sure a lot of people who come to you, who you've met in your life.
The only thing I would say in relation to Haiti, I think that so the people can understand, the people that don't know Haiti. In Haiti, you cannot have two consecutive terms.
Yeah.
So you can do a first 5 years and then let somebody else take over and then come back again. I think we should just have two consecutive terms, mm-hmm. and then maybe a president can have his philosophy, can execute what he really thinks is right for the country on a longer period of time.
Right.
Maybe that can have an impact. But I don't think it should. I definitely don't think it should go over 10 years for one president.
No, I agree with that. I just want to see Haiti move north, and I can't say that it's. It, you know, there have been some good things that's happened, but it's just, you know, it's just hard seeing.
But we're gonna get there. Relax.
We are.
Let me tell you, I'm very on a short term basis. I'm very, very negative about Haiti. I think I'm very pessimistic. I see that things gonna get worse. For example, I see that things gonna get worse in the next 5 years. But when you look at it from the next 20, 50. Oh, we might get there. We might get there because we certainly have the potential. Like, the country has a lot of resources. We tend to have smart people that come from there.
Yeah, a lot.
We have a lot of smart people.
A lot of smart people, man.
It's just that we don't know how to utilize it. We don't know as a society how to utilize it yet. I guess at some point we'll learn how to do that. Yeah. Or we'll have to. We'll basically have to do that.
There'll be no choice. So I want to jump back to your blog post. So there's one article that was written that pretty much, you know, I think anyone who follows Aibo Post, well, in my opinion, is probably the most, I would say that was the most striking for me when I read it. It's when you pretty much went in, you went in on the president, but you did it in a way where you went in on everybody. You went in on me, and you went in on all facets of
society.
So the article was called Monsieur le Président, colon, get my mouth. So before I talk about the article, I want to talk about that colon, get my mouth, what that means. Everyone who's from Haiti knows what that means. That is the mother of all curses in Creole. Like, Creole is a very descriptive language. Like, you could close your eye. If you speak Creole and someone's speaking to you, you can close your eyes and imagine what they're saying and see it in front of you. And that is, like, the most vile curse, you know? And it's just, like, anytime you say that to someone, that's a fight. But people just say it, you know, like it's nothing here. I mean, it's not nothing, but it's something. But you wrote it at a time, I think there was a lot of tension between the Haiti DR crisis and then, you know, the president, who's a showman first, I think, was dancing. I think it was Sean Paul came. Someone came, and then
I think it was after. It was, when did I write that?
It was like a year ago, maybe.
A year ago, almost less than a year. But I wrote that after he insulted a lady in Miragwan.
Right. Yeah.
That told him that basically asked him about what has he done so far. So he was mad and he insulted the lady. So imagine Barack Obama, somebody yelling at Barack Obama, "What have you done lately?"
Yeah, bitch, shut up, bitch.
And then Barack Obama replied, "Fuck you, bitch, come here,"
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was kind of crazy. So it was shocking even for somebody like Michel Martelly, who's known for that.
Right.
So it was shocking to me. And I was like, okay, since the president could say that to someone, I think he allowed me to say that to him.
Open the doors.
He opened the door. So I basically tried to do, but I tried to not do it in a way that I would personally just go at him. So I went at
everybody.
Everybody basically was part of the problem, including me.
Yeah, you went at yourself too. but you know, I thought it was brilliant, man. I'm not gonna lie, it was shocking for sure, but it was great, and I think it needed to be said. And I looked at it as like a everyone wake up moment. Look what's going on in front of you. And I think it was really smart. Again, the way you went at everybody, even me, because, you know, I have opinions as well. But again, it's so limited from what I can base my opinion on. I still want to give my opinion, you know. After you wrote it and then you clicked send or clicked post, were you like, what the fuck am I doing?
Actually, first I knew that I wanted to post it. First thing I did, I sent it to my dad.
I told him, hey, pops.
here's my next post. And then he was like, "Oh, cool. That's nice."
Wow.
It was like this. He just said, "Cool, it's nice." I didn't send it to my mom.
Right.
I know she would go crazy.
Okay, of course.
And then I went to the editors. At the time, we were three or four. We were three at the time. And then I told them that basically if I had one vote and the other person, if we were two against one, it would be published. I asked that we needed to have everybody agreeing on that before posting it. Everybody agreed.
That's what's
so
up.
It was.
Shout out to the editing team for Aibo Post.
So it was a done deal, and then it got posted. It got posted. So I knew that it would be a shock for a few people. I knew that I would probably lose some friends.
Did you lose some friends?
Nah, not really.
Yeah.
I think my real friends know that.
They know
I'm
what's
the
up.
Kind of person who would say that.
Yeah. Did you feel though, like after you posted it? I mean, you sent it to your father, your editors. But did you feel like, man, like for example, that wouldn't go down in Rwanda? Let me say that. No, I don't think so. No. And it probably wouldn't go down 30 years ago here.
But let's say that it wouldn't go down in Rwanda because the president of Rwanda would never.
No, he wouldn't do that.
He wouldn't do that.
Good point. Good point. Touche. But did you feel that there would be some sort of repercussion, or you weren't thinking about that?
Oh yes, probably. I think there would be. I think there is still, and socially, I think socially, I have a big for people who know me. I have sometimes I walk around and I feel like I have that big patch on my head saying that he's the guy who wrote that, you know. But most people know it doesn't affect my relationship
right.
with other people, even people that were close to the government and stuff like this. Even some of them kind of respect me because I, instead of saying it, instead of hiding it, I told them that to their faces. So some of them respected that. But most of them didn't like it.
Yeah.
So there was some discomfort after. And then some people were worried about my professional career too. Maybe that's the part that I was a little worried about. But I told myself, yeah, if the guy that spent his life saying this got president, if I just write this a few times for once.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah, he did pretty well. He did that and became president. What I wanted to ask you is, after you posted that, did you guys get more viewership on the post, on the blog?
Actually, the website crashed after that.
Because everyone was.
At some point we had. We had about 2,000 click per minute.
Wow.
So when we got around 100,000 views, a little more, I think 120,000 views, the website cracked, and then after that, a few other websites took the text and then published it on their website, and I think it ended with something 190,000 views, close to 200,000, but maybe now it got to 250,000, maybe now. I haven't checked lately, but maybe it got there.
Do you, when you look at numbers, are you able to see who follows the post, the blog most? Is it mostly in country or is it internationally?
So far we have about 50%. It's 50-50.
Okay.
But always Haiti, we have a little more. Watching in Haiti would be like 52%. And then from the diaspora, we would have... Florida.
Yeah, of course.
And then Montreal, and then New York.
Yeah, that's where most Haitians reside that don't live in Haiti and Boston. Let me ask you a question. Since you are a journalist, what do you think...
I don't consider myself being one, by the way.
Okay, so since you are kind of... you're not a journalist, but you know...
I blog.
You blog.
Yeah.
But what do you think of people who... So what do you think of journalists in Haiti? Journalists that come from other countries that come and report on Haiti. Like, I'll give you just a quick story. I was networking with someone, and they told me that they're a journalist, and they said that what's going on in Haiti now is the same thing that happened 5 years ago. I'm so sick of this. And this is a white American person. And then, but what do you think of people like that coming in and just kind of having an opinion on Haiti?
Sometimes it's good. Let me first say that sometimes it's very good, it's helpful to have an outside eye, you know, that will tell you how they see your country, how they see what you're doing. You need that, I think. I think it's one of the best feedbacks you can get. But the way the journalists do it very often, the way the media, the international media does it, it's not fair because they tend to take part of the story. It's just a little part of the story, and out of it they make a story.
Yeah.
So the international audience that is reading the article or watching the video, they only get part of the story. And I think that's why a lot of young Haitians, especially with social media, got that urge to try to show another side of Haiti. And I understand that. And it's reasonable. You want to show that your home, it's not always about people killing each other.
Déchoucage, etc.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not all about that. So I really got that trend that happened. But I also think that trend overdid it. At some point, that trend, even still now, they kind of want to hide the reality too. I think people should know that Haiti has beautiful mountains and beautiful coastal areas, but we need to be aware that we cannot hide the reality that there's a lot of poverty in Haiti too. We need to know that. So my approach is that these journalists, they should come. And they should still come. But I hope that in the future they'll consider the big picture.
Yeah.
They'll consider the big picture.
Okay.
So.
Okay, cool. Let me ask you this. I feel like a lot of men, Haitian men, their dream is to somehow be involved in the government of Haiti or be president of Haiti. I think the last president, started off as an artist, and I mean, I think he still is an artist, but it was in his dream to be president. Wyclef ran for president. I have friends and family who've talked about being president in the past or just being close to that type of position. One, why do you think that is? And two, have you ever felt that way?
No, I've never felt that way. The reason that is, it's because of the way we tell the Haitian history, history in general, or history. Our history is not based, it's not being told like the country's history. It's being told as the history of the people that made that country. So let's say it's as if the American story was told through the eyes and the arms of George Washington and Hamilton,
right,
and Jefferson. So that's what happened in Haiti. So in Haiti, the stories that we get, it's Dessalines fighting. That's what sticks in our head. It's Capualamor, the bullet hitting his horse.
Yeah.
It's Alexandre Pétion negotiating with the French. You know, it's the story. We personalize the Haitian history too much. And I think that's why when you're a kid and then you're listening to your history teacher talking about Dessalines, you feel like, oh, I could be Dessalines. So Dessalines has not become a historical figure. He has become what Superman is for a little American.
Right.
So, I think that's why a lot of Haitians feel like they should be president.
Got you.
Or they can be there.
They can be there.
Even if they're not prepared.
Seems that way. A lot of people, hopefully, aren't always prepared. But I guess if you wish it, if you wish it, it can happen.
In Haiti, you should believe it. You can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So, for me, whenever, again, this is coming from the diaspora's perspective, you ask someone about what's going on in Haiti, you get one story. You ask someone else, you get a different story. It's hard to get the same story twice, you know? So, like, for example, if I want to know about what happened in country X, I can get facts somewhere, you know? And you can find the same way on Haiti. You could, like, Google it. But you get it from, you get totally different stories from so many different people. And I guess that's normal. But if someone like a casual listener of the Global Citizen podcast is like, they just heard the podcast, I'm like, yeah, I want to learn more about Haiti. Where would you recommend that they look up before they ask anybody anything?
What? Thomas Mathieu, it's the author, it's the main author of Haitian history. He wrote a few books. I don't know if they're translated in English. Mm. I think they must be. Maybe that would be the first step, but that's kind of heavy.
Yeah.
It's funny because what's the name of that? There was that I don't know if you remember that there was that channel, that YouTube channel that did some history bits on different parts of history.
Mm.
What was the name of that? It was something about history. They had, let me check. It's on my phone.
Look it up.
I'm going to let the people know what it is. They had a good videos that gave the overall view of what Haiti was, of what Haiti is, what's the history behind it. So to understand Haiti as it is right now, I think you need to have a certain type of knowledge of the beginning of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you don't have all of it, but around 1804,
right.
You know, the dynamic of the societies that were there, and then you'll kind of understand why it is like this now, because it came from far away. When I'm saying far away, I don't think that 200 years is that far. To me, Haiti is a very young country.
It's very young.
It's very, very, very young.
200 years is not that far.
So I guess you have to do some research in the early 1804,
right.
Early 1800s to understand why. And you don't even have to do it on Haiti only. You can do it on the region.
Mm-hmm.
And then put a little emphasis on Haiti, and then I think it will help you a lot.
Okay.
As of authors, if you're into sociology, there's an author that is named Wolf Trouillot. He's dead. He did some great work trying to understand the Haitian society.
Mm.
I think it's the best sociological work that's ever been done in Haiti. It's going to help you understand the society. And he did some history research too. If you want to go deep into history, you got to read Professor Maniga, who was president too.
Yeah.
Who else? And I think, as weird as it is, novels. Novels tell a lot about Haiti's history. So, for example, to understand the Duvalier era, I think one of the authors that you need to read is Marie-Vieux Chauvet.
Okay.
She's not doing history, but through her novels, you can feel how, you can actually feel how the people were feeling back then during the Duvalier era. So a lot of Haiti's history can be known through its novels and even art in general.
Yeah.
Because we express ourselves through art a lot.
Definitely.
A lot. And maybe that's why we've had or less, or now he's the former
officially.
Former from 2 hours ago.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Maybe an hour and a half.
An hour ago, he was an artist. And I think for a lot of the diaspora who are very much into Haiti, they read a lot of Danzika. And
yes, Danzika, she does a great job.
She does a fun. I met her a few times. She does not know who I am, but I've met her a few times.
But what's even amazing about her job, it's that I think she only left Haiti when she was 12 or 13.
She was young.
She was young.
But she was young when Baby Doc fell.
Yeah, but she explained it in such a vivid way.
Yeah.
She's great.
She's great.
It's Crash Course. The YouTube channel is Crash Course.
Okay,
they have a small video in Haiti that is 15 minutes. I think these 15 minutes will actually give you a good overall of what Haitian history is.
Crash Course. I'm going to check that out myself. Let me ask you this last question before I let you go. So you said that, you know, you think by like 2050, Haiti will be in a way better place. What do you think, if you could sum it up into maybe one to three things that I'm going to say Haiti. I'm not going to say the government. I'm not going to say the people. I'm just going to say Haiti needs to focus on the top three things for it to be in a better place by 2050. What do you think that would be?
Education first.
Like, okay.
Education maybe should have the three spots.
One, 1A, 1B.
Exactly. Since you asked for three, I think we need to focus on our national production.
Mm.
So far, Haiti doesn't produce shit.
Not anymore.
We don't do, everything is imported. So I think we need to focus on that, to really think that this is important for a nation actually to have that. And then the third thing is, I don't know, man. Education?
Yeah, no, that's fair. Education is a big thing.
And education, it's not only going to school, though. It's not. I don't want people to think it's just about going to school, going to university. Haitians, I've been to some of the best schools in Haiti, and we've never really had an education that focuses on our national identity, on the what we'll have to eventually do for the country. It was just, okay, I do math, I study French, and then that's about it. We need that social aspect of education too. Social and moral aspect.
Yeah.
Because we don't have
what you mean.
We don't have it in our education system, unfortunately.
Right.
Unfortunately we don't have it.
Not yet. But by social and moral, do you mean kind of just like how to act, how to be, or who we are?
No, when I'm saying social and moral, it's toward the country, towards the nation.
Right.
How we, for example, the most basic stuff ever, Haitians don't understand that you gotta keep your room clean. You have to keep the streets clean.
Yeah.
This is basic education that needs to be done. At your, of course, in the household, but also in school too. It's not. These things aren't. There's no emphasis on them.
Yeah.
The society think it can go and keep on going without doing these basic stuff. And
yeah.
We kind of need this basic stuff.
I feel you.
We need.
Cool. Do you want to plug the blog website? And if you're on Twitter, do you want to put those things out there?
Definitely. The blog is aibupost.com. We're on Facebook, aibupost. We're on Twitter too. At Aibu Post, it's AYIBOPOST, and we're on Instagram too. So yeah.
Cool, man. Yo, thank you very much, man. I've been hunting you down for a while, asking you about this.
Not that much.
Yeah, a little bit. But thanks a lot, man. And hope you can come back at some point.
It will be a pleasure, man.
Cool. All right, everybody. I'll be back soon. And thanks for listening. Check us out on MI83, Made in 83 Network. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. Peace.
I like them brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, and Haitian. Name is Fight Dog from the Zulu Nation. So you're in the jam that we can get down. Now let's knock the boots.